What's up, y'all? I'm Will here with Schedule Fly, and this is the Restaurant Owners Uncorked podcast, one of the highest rated hospitality podcasts in the world, brought to you by us at Schedule Fly. We provide a very simple web-based restaurant employee scheduling software backed by legendary customer service. If you're on pencil and paper or Excel, or you're on some software with tons of bells and whistles and features you don't need or use, ScheduleFly is the perfect place for you. Easy to use, point, click, and go, and we'll take great care of you. ScheduleFly.com, free trial, check it out. Also, this podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Pop Menu and The Giving Kitchen and Kickfin, and you're going to hear about them in just a minute. First of all, let's talk about today's guest. All right, y'all. This is like a celebrity interview. This is Liliana Lavelle, Lil, as she goes by, who started Coyote Ugly. So if you've seen the movie Coyote Ugly, it's about her places. And she's awesome. I mean, this is just such a cool story. Phenomenal entrepreneur, phenomenal business person. Love talking to her. She's just so easy to get to know, so cool, great business mind, has built a great team. She's got 9 Coyote Ugly locations that are corporate owned, and then I think there are 24 total right now franchised. They're open to more. They're looking in Savannah and Charleston here in the States, and then some places overseas. So what a awesome lady, cool conversation, so much fun. What a great opportunity. Thank you, Dave Nitzel, Dave and Dave, who wrote Hospitality DNA and have been on this podcast. Dave Nitzel made this introduction, and I'm certainly better off for it, and our audience will be too. Y'all enjoy this episode. More coming soon. The busiest time of year is coming. Is your staff ready for the holiday rush? This year, give your team the gift of Pop Menu AI Answering, a simple solution for phones ringing off the hook. AI Answering handles calls 24/7, 365 days a year, so your staff can focus on in-person guests. Customize your greetings and responses, answer common questions, promote specials and events, and send follow-up links to ordering and reservations. AI Answering handles it all while escalating more complex conversations back to your team. Never miss another tasty revenue opportunity. Pop Menu, the marketing technology platform designed to make growing your restaurant easy. Discover more AI restaurant tools that turn your to-do list into an already done list by requesting a demo today. For a limited time, get $100 off your first month, plus lock in one unchanging monthly rate at popmenu.com. Go now to get $100 off your first month at popmenu.com. Be sure to tell them that Will from Restaurant Owners Uncorked podcast and Schedule Fly sent you. Y'all, this is a great business. I just told you what they like me to say. I will say that we have a lot of mutual customers at Schedule Fly with Pop Menu. They all agree. Great product, great customer service, great results. Check them out, popmenu.com. This episode is also brought to you by The Giving Kitchen. Giving Kitchen provides emergency assistance for food service workers through financial support and a network of community resources. Since its inception in 2013, Giving Kitchen has served over 15,000 food service workers and awarded over $10.5 million to food service workers in crisis. If you or someone you know is a food service worker in crisis, please ask for help. TheGivingKitchen.org, and again, that's TheGivingKitchen.org. Y'all, this is a phenomenal organization. Jen, the founder, has been on this podcast. Jen Heidinger Kendrick, check out that episode to hear their full story. But if you know somebody or you need help, go to TheGivingKitchen.org. Incredible, incredible organization, and very responsive, and has a wonderful mission. Check them out. All right, Lil. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this today. I tell you what, do me a favor, just introduce yourself real quick.
I'm Liliana Lovell. People go by Lil. I'm the CEO and founder of Coyote Ugly Saloon, and I'm a powerhouse.
Yeah,
I love it. Look at that. From Nashville.
Look at that mug. There you go. Wait, which location is that?
Nashville.
Nashville. Okay. How many locations do y'all have now?
Well, I think globally after the pandemic, we're down to about 24. So,
24. Okay. And are they, do you, how many are franchised and how many are company?
I own and run nine, and the rest are franchised.
The rest are franchised. Okay. Well, we're going to get into your backstory in a minute here. I just was want to get like level set. So, and then you're in La Jolla. God, man, what a cool place to be. Yeah. If you're going to go to California, La Jolla is not a bad place to go.
Yeah, it's funny. It's, I miss New Orleans actually, probably most. But I'm sorry, but the weather's too good here. I love it.
The weather's intoxicating. I've been in North Carolina my whole life, except for in Charlotte, but except for 2 years. My wife and I lived in Burbank, and but we would go down to San Diego and La Jolla a lot. And I mean, that whole area, like when we moved back, and this was 2 years in Burbank, right? And I mean, there was a period of time I found a letter when my grandmother passed that I'd written her this letter. I was like, we haven't seen a drop of rain in 9 months. And it was always sunny. And so we moved back to the same weather I had grown up with my entire life. And I was like depressed for a month or two just because it would be like cloudy days or something. Like
We
it gets
in
so.
Converse, when we moved here, my son was about 14, and one day it rained, and he was like, "Thank God."
Right. Yeah. It's just so
Well,
weird.
that's
You never
very
see
nice.
rain.
You found the letter, so your grandmother saved that letter.
She did. She did. When she passed, they gave me a box of letters she had saved. I used to write her a lot, like when I would travel and stuff. It looked like little postcards and things like that. And I had, yeah. And I didn't even remember that it had been that long. But she's
Yeah.
like, I was like, you're not going to believe it was like October something. I was like, we haven't seen rain since the end of January or something like that. So, but yeah, well, listen. So, interestingly enough, you and I got connected through Dave Nitzel, Dave and Dave, who wrote Hospitality DNA. I read that book. I loved the book. I loved all the stories in that book. I loved your story. I think those guys are great. I think that's an extremely valuable book. I had them on the podcast. I mean, I had like, I think I had, we had like a 2.5 hour episode. I thought that was such a well done piece of work. And, recently I was like,
He was interesting because he connected with me during lockdown, and it was interesting because he was very, go, go, go. And here I had, all my businesses are shutting down, and I'm trying to be up on, I just remember being like, okay, like had that mental conversation, perk up.
yeah.
But he was very, he was good about keeping his own interests up to current times, and he was really very active during that time. So he was a good resource for sure.
Yeah, they did a great job with that book. And so ironically, you were in New Orleans all those years, 13 years you said before you moved to La Jolla 9 years ago. And I was supposed to be in New Orleans earlier this week. We had some family stuff, so I had to kind of cancel the trip last minute, but he got me connected with Neil Bodenheimer, who runs Cure down there, who was also in the book. And so Dave and Dave were there, they did a talk, and I was going to come to a podcast afterwards. And we wound up doing it. I did it from here because I had to stay home, but got to meet Neil. And when I went to Dave Nitzel like a month ago, I'm like, "Hey man, like, tell who are a few people that were in your book if we wanted to get some just phenomenal people on this podcast. You had all phenomenal people, like, but who do you think who would you like to recommend?" And he's like, "I got it." And he emailed you and emailed Neil, and here we are. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Cure is on a street in New Orleans that he's part of kind of the rejuvenation of this one street over there. And it's interesting, the particular area he's on, honestly, 10 years ago, you'd never go. And he's part of the revitalization of that neighborhood. So he's done a great job.
He has done a great job. We talked about that because he told me he owned the building. I'm like, "Wow, how'd you buy the building?" He's like, "Well, dude, when I bought the building, this wasn't exactly where you wanted to go." So
I
good
own
for
the
them.
building the Coyotes Inn in New Orleans as well, but we're in the French, we're the like the first street in the French Quarter.
Ooh. Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, that's good real
Well,
estate. He
own
said
a
he's got a.
250-year-old building, not that easy.
Yeah. Well,
With
yeah, I mean,
hurricanes every year.
I was going to say maintaining that is probably no joke. That's really cool, though. That's a good piece of property to have. Neil said he's got another place over in the French Quarter. I was like, "Do you own that building?" He's like, "No, dude." Like, nope. But anyway, so yeah, so glad to have this connection. And you know, of course, your brand is worldwide. And I mean, I've known about Coyote Ugly for a long time. I read a little bit about your backstory, but if I read correctly, you actually started out in investment banking and made your way over
I
to
worked at a company called D.H. Blair for just about a year. I was apprenticing stockbroker. I had checked all the boxes. I went to NYU during my stay at NYU. My family had nothing, so I was always bartending and waitressing and things like that. But we were told you were supposed to go in the business world when you were finishing up college. So that's what I did. I wasn't making any money and I was pulling all these other shifts. And finally, I just could not do the two things. And of course, being short-sighted as a kid, I was like, well, I'm making much more money bartending and managing jobs. So I'll, or managing restaurants. So I'll do that. So I dropped the business world and my little 9 to 5 and just continued bartending and managing bars. So.
Well, yeah, you can say short-sighted and myopic, which I get, which a lot, I mean, you can be guilty of that, but it also clearly suited you. Did you have, a lot of us that start businesses just, I mean, I got out of college. I was the same deal. I got out of college. I was like, oh, I got to go get a real job or whatever. And I worked at Nations Bank. I'm like, dude, this sucks. Like, I don't want to work for 50 layers of people and all these rules. Like I want to do my own. Like I want to be my own, but I don't like people telling me what to do all the time. Like, did you have that streak in you as well? There's a lot of that sort of bucking the system streak for a lot of entrepreneurs.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is that for me, it was really very much about m the now and the money. So, my family had no money. I was always paying for myself, paying for an apartment in New York City. And I just remember feeling like, okay, I need more cash. Rents in New York City, even back then, were so expensive. So I didn't necessarily feel like I didn't want a boss, but I just needed to do things at a quicker pace, and that wasn't going to happen there.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. So you're working in, well, where in, so let me take a step back then. You grew up in New York, in New York City, or?
I grew up in Neuchâtel, New York, and then I went to NYU and just stayed in Manhattan for about 17, 18 years. So, and, it's funny because I really, with a lot of my NYU friends, most of us had a similar path, even though we were going to school for various things. And what I think it came down to is New York City is just simply too expensive. You couldn't be like the normal person and go get your 9 to 5 job and be able to afford your apartment. That just didn't exist. So everybody I knew was supplementing their work with bartending or waitering. And I just think I got to the point where I started managing these bars. And I just could not do both. I couldn't, I had to be up, I had to be at work at 6:45 in the morning for my 7 a.m. meeting, but I was working until 4 in the morning. So it just got to a point where I just couldn't do both.
Not sustainable. All right, I have to ask this. I see this in the background there. I see the reflection of a what appears to be a very beautiful dog hanging out. What kind of dog do you got there?
He's a pit
I
mix.
guess.
He's always around. The last podcast I was on, he was up. He's a rescue from New Orleans. So I've had him for over 2 years. And this is as far away from me as he'll be. because
Yeah.
normally he's in my lap at all times. But yeah, he's a cutie.
You can get them in your lap. We have four dogs, and one of them, our most recent one that we got, is 6 months old, Oslo, and he's a pit mix. And they're all rescue dogs. And
Only
I mean,
rescue, that's all I'll do.
that's all we'll do too. But those pits are like, he follows me. He is my shadow.
Yesterday, I took him to the
Oh
play, so he loves the water.
man, what a beautiful, what's his name?
Herbie.
Herbie. Oh
I don't
man.
know if you're old
Yeah.
enough to remember this, but there was a show called Herbie the Love Bug.
Oh, I remember Herbie the Love Bug. Heck
So
yeah.
I
I'm
met him.
49. I've been around. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I
I remember
got
Herbie the Love
him.
Bug.
We were just kind of coming out of lockdown, and I was living in New Orleans at that time, and they bring the dog to you to because you weren't allowed to go into the shelters, so they brought him, and that was it. Mine.
Oh, yeah. They are sweet, sweet, sweet dogs, those pits. They get this reputation because people train them and abuse them like that. But they are sweet. I mean, that dog, it is, man. I told my wife and my family just a few months ago, the lady across the street had this litter, and it was like a rescue litter, and she brings them in and raises the puppies for 3 months. And they're talking about this dog. I'm like, look, guys, we have three dogs. We live on a little farm. They had all these horses. I said, if y'all bring another dog in this house, I'm out. Like, I'm gone. That's it. I don't want any more response. Like, I'm done. You know, kind of joke. Sure enough, not only do we have the other dog, that they laugh at me all the time. They're like, eat your words, because that dog is like my little shadow, like my best friend,
Yeah.
snuggles with me at night.
Oh, I know.
They're so sweet.
My son will watch him while, like, if I went on work trips, and my son's like, enough. The dog is like laying on my face. He definitely needs more attention than most.
Well, okay. So sorry for the tea. I just can't, I'm a sucker for dogs. I had to ask. I kept looking at him and I was like, I'm going to get too distracted with this dog. So I need to ask. Okay. So you need the cash. You got to make this happen. And you're working in restaurants and learning how to just make these things pop. But what happened? Because you're what I've read is you're like, you started, there was theatrics involved in what you did. You're on the bar and you're making things fun and you're realizing like, this is how you get people's attention. So just walk through that story of how it went from you making extra cash working in bars to realizing you had, a unique way of getting people, your guests, engaged.
You know, it's funny because I was thinking about this recently because one of my bar managers wanted myself and one of my corporate team to do a bartending contest against some of the newer girls and see who would win. And I said, not a bartending contest, but a sales contest. Dude, I can't make any of the newer drinks. But I know I can outsell anybody. And I think that that's what it really was at the very beginning, is that as I was bartending and realizing that I could hold these people's attention, and I didn't even have to be on the bar. I was just very good at just being showy, always trying to wrangle new sales. And I think it just, my shifts were just getting busier and busier and busier. And I realized I had something. And it wasn't even always about me. Like, people can remember me as a bar. In fact, oh my God. So I had to change the location of my New York City bar. And I had to move it to 14th Street. This is recently, a few years ago, I guess. And we're right next door to Beauty Bar, which is a pretty famous bar. Well, the owner came in to meet me and he told me this story. And he said, I know you're not going to remember me, but I came in on one of your shifts. I was working at this place called the Village Idiot. And he goes, I threw up all night. It's the drunkest I've ever been. But you are a legend. And like, I'm looking around because my staff is around and I'm thinking, okay, don't follow my lead on this one. But it was awesome just to hear somebody that he'd Because so few people actually have ever seen me when I was bartending like that, you know, because now it's the girls, I'm behind the scenes.
Yeah, for sure, for
But
sure.
yeah, I think it was just about making money and realizing what I was good at in sales.
Drawing people's attention, engaging people, entertaining people, persuading people. These are all great. Yeah, I love it. I love that you took that as a sales opportunity, not a, like who can make the best drink opportunity. I mean, that's what it's all about. So you start doing that. You're working at the Village Idiot. There's a big jump between doing what you're doing there and being very successful there and going, all right, I want to do this on my own. So how what prompted that?
Well, I remember hitting 24 and thinking I couldn't keep up with all those hours and doing it for somebody else because I'm managing his bar. And I had said to myself, I have to have my own business by the time I'm 25, or I'll go back to 9 to 5. I just remember feeling this feeling like I am already burnt out and I'm working for somebody else. So I'm not reaping the benefits of, you know, my hard work. And something just fell in my lap. And I just remember thinking, I have nothing to lose. So I had a business partner kind of thrown at me. And what was really good about that situation is we were 50-50. But I ran everything how I wanted. The reason he invested money is because he believed in me, but he wanted nothing to do. Like he was like, he's a writer. I want to be able to write and make money while I'm writing. So it was kind of the perfect storm because I was able to run everything how I wanted, but I got some funding from somebody else to help me do it.
So you knew you wanted to do this. How did you find, you said it was thrown in your, like, were you out actively pursuing investors or how did this happen?
Okay, now this is a strange story. I had dated somebody, and what he would do is he'd go into baseball card stores and buy out the inventory. And so he had asked myself and who ended up being my business partner to invest in this baseball card thing. So I had given money, and so did my partner, who I knew slightly but didn't really know at the time. And all of a sudden, he comes back. He was supposed to have a U-Haul filled with, you know, a million baseball cards, and he comes back with this lease on this restaurant. What was interesting was, so his friend who was loaning him money, and then me, got together without him and said, we don't want him as a partner. We'll be partners. We set up our company. So we took the lease. We had him assign the lease over to us and kicked him out. And then we were partners. So it kind of fell in my lap. I wasn't actively looking.
Why did he come back with a restaurant? Like, what was the story?
Well, my guess is that he saw how well we were doing. And I think his hope was that if he put this in my lap, he knew I'd be successful. But I think his hope was that he would be a partner. But both of us immediately were like, he's shady, get him out.
Yeah.
And so then we had a new lease with just the two of us.
And it was across the street from Village Idiot? Did I read that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Village Idiot. So I managed there for a few years, and the owner was a little nuts. Fun though, like, you know, it's funny because there were good times, but there were bad times. And I think the hope I had was that I would take over the business because he was leaning toward that. But he just was getting deeper and deeper in debt in that particular location. And when we opened, they were actually closed. They had a padlock, you know, the IRS closed them down. So They had closed by the time I had opened.
Oh wow. Okay. So you get a lease on a place there in New York. What year was this? Was this like the early
Well, that
late 80s,
was
early 90s?
92. And
92.
so we got the lease in 92 and we opened in 93.
I'm sure you had confidence. You knew what you were doing. This is what you wanted. But were there moments where you're like, what was I thinking? Like when you're building this out, or did you just full speed ahead, just knew if you got it going, you'd figure it out? Because that's a big leap between managing and now you own and you're responsible and you got a partner, but you're in every bit of the operations.
I was in it. And I also think
You're
at
in it.
that age, I didn't have much to lose. So,
Yeah,
you
it's a good
know,
point.
I was still
25.
bartending and making money. So I remember I had hired these architects who were still in college. So they were getting their degrees. They were my regulars at the Idiot. So I hired them to build the bar. So they would start because they were still going to school. So they would start construction at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'd finish my shift, walk across the street, and hand them like the money I made from the night just to try to keep them going. But so I don't think I thought about it as what if I fail. I don't ever remember thinking that. I had a huge following, huge. I don't think I ever thought about failing. I do remember a few months in realizing that it was too many hours for my body. Like I just remember I was bartending, I was managing the place. We would open at that point, we were opening at noon, closing at 4. I was only sleeping a few hours a night. And I do remember like having a mini little like breakdown like 3 months in and saying to myself, I have to stop bartending, like and trying to find people who were more like me so that I didn't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, you got to work on the business, not in the business so much. You're not scalable, but your skill set and what you learned is.
Well, and what I've done in the years is realizing that everybody's different. So at Coyote, it's not, they're not in a box. You know, I would like, you know, if you're a singer and you can utilize that, great. If you're just funny and you can be on the mic and utilize that for sales, great. But not everybody can be me, and nor can I be someone. I can't dance. And you know, these girls are dancers. I can't fucking dance. So, you know what I mean? I just made
Yeah.
sure that I was utilizing their skill set.
Gotcha. How long were you there in your first location before you realized, let's grow this thing?
Well, I actually opened another Coyote uptown. But something happened. Like we had made it, we had put in the lease that if we were having trouble getting a liquor license, because we were able to use a temp license, but if we're having trouble getting a liquor license that we could pull out. And so we were open for only about 3 months and we were having a lot of issues. So we ended up pulling out of that one. But weirdly, I was in talk before the whole Coyote Ugly thing started kind of flourishing. I was in talks with what was his name? Jeremy. He was in Saving Private Ryan.
Jeremy Priven, Piven, Priven? Was that him?
Maybe Jeremy's not his first name. I'll have to think about it. But we were in talks about doing, I'm very health conscious. And so I know you wouldn't think that owning Coyote Ugly and everything else, but you know, I exercise all the time. I eat very clean. And so this guy was working with my husband at the time. And he was into organic raw foods. And what I wanted to do was produce a fast food health food chain. So we were in talks about trying to develop that. And then all of a sudden, I get this call from Bruckheimer's company because Liz Gilbert had written this article that was in GQ magazine about her time working at Coyote. So I get this call, and all of a sudden it's Bruckheimer's people, we'd like to meet you. And, we're thinking about writing something. I was like, okay, cool. And my husband at the time said, they do that with a million things. Nobody's ever gonna come, whatever. Well, all of a sudden I get a call and they're like, oh, can you meet the president of Bruckheimer's at the bar tomorrow at, it was like 4 p.m., 5 p.m. And I was like, okay. So I go down. He comes in. I'm sitting at the end of the bar and he's like, he goes to the bartender, can I speak to Lil? Well, she goes to introduce me and he goes, bullshit, that's not Lil. And I remember saying, okay, somebody buy me a drink. And when he realizes I am Lil, he can come over. Well, it took about 3 minutes and he comes over and he's like, I'm so sorry. I was like, dude, I consider it a compliment that you thought I was too young to be Lil. But it was so the ball started rolling after that. And by the way, what was the question? Did I go off on such a tangent that I forgot the
Well, I was curious how long you had been in your first location when you
oh,
realized it was
before.
time to start growing. I didn't know if the movie had come out before or after that, or if that was like just the timing of all that.
Once that started happening, so that was probably 8 years, 7 or 8 years, I guess. Then maybe sooner. Once that started happening, then I had to kind of go into the deep dive of trademarking and doing stuff like that. And that was a bit of a tailspin. When you don't know what you're doing and you never think that's going to happen. So that's when I knew I had to. I had an opportunity at that moment to take Coyote Ugly to another level, which I really honestly never thought Coyote would be that vehicle for me. I always thought it, honestly, I thought it was going to be the
Healthy
organic.
fast food.
And if I'd had more money at the time, I should have done both, but that felt a little overwhelming to me.
That would be a lot. That would be a lot. Are you still entertaining that idea? You eat health. What? Tell me what that. I'm so curious because I'm into diet, nutrition, fitness, heavily into it myself. So glad to hear that. What does that mean when you say eating clean? I always just like to ask people about this kind of stuff.
So I've been doing something called Eat Right for Your Blood Type for about 30 years. And, eating clean to me is, well, I go according to my blood type. So I'm blood type O, so I can have red meat, seafood. What I can't have is wheat, corn, potatoes. It's very food specific. So I can eat pineapple, but I'm not supposed to eat orange. I'm just, I can eat Ezekiel bread. Like this morning, I had a half a slice of Ezekiel bread with some organic honey. That's it for now. I'll have some fruit. I will eat steamed spinach and salmon. And last night I had a steak. But yes, I eat very clean. Like I don't fry foods. I try to use olive oil and not use butter, things like that.
All right, y'all, it is time for a little mid-episode break. We're going to talk about Kickfin. Thousands of restaurants, bars, and breweries use Kickfin to tip out their employees instantly. No cash required. With Kickfin, tips go directly to your employees' bank of choice the second their shift ends. It's a really simple solution to a really big problem because if you're still paying out credit card tips in cash, it's costing you. Time-consuming bank runs and cash counting take managers away from work that matters. Cash is hard to track, which leads to accounting headaches, and it creates the perfect opportunity for theft, human error, and compliance issues. Bottom line, there's never been an instant secure way to pay out tips until Kickfin. It's an easy-to-use software that sends real-time, cashless tip payouts straight to your employees' bank accounts, 24/7, 365. Kickfin gives managers hours back in their day, makes reporting a breeze, and protects your business from risk. Most importantly, employees love it. Restaurants can have Kickfin up and running overnight. Employees can enroll in seconds. No hardware, no contracts, no setup fees. Visit kickfin.com for a personalized demo. See how restaurants across the country are digitizing tips with Kickfin. All right, that's what they asked me to say, so I say it, and it tells the story very well, but I like to add this in. We referred a customer that we know and love very well, SupDogs, to Kickfin. SupDogs has been a customer for a super long time. Trust them very much with their opinion on these types of tools. They started using Kickfin. I asked Brett, the owner, recently how it's going. He said, Kickfin is perfect. It's going great. Exactly what we were hoping for. So there you go. Kickfin.com, y'all. Check them out. Tell me about the blood type. I mean, I've heard of that, but what's the, like, what is the foundation of that? That because of your blood type, there's the what's inside, whatever. I mean, obviously, what you put in your body, there's a gut-brain connection. We all understand that, like, eating well is really a key to so many things. But this, under this, you've got a blood type, and these are the things that are going to cause problems because of your blood type. So don't eat those.
So the basis of the book is that blood types actually came during certain times of civilization. So blood type O being the first one, we were hunters and gatherers. Then I don't remember what the second one is, you know, A or B. And all of a sudden you have agriculture. So they're starting to be able to eat grown foods, wheat, things like that. And going up to AB, which I think has the most blended type of diet that their body is able to process. So basically saying on a cellular level, we are still genetically programmed to do what our ancestors have done. So me being O, hunter-gatherer.
Got it. Okay. Which is hence the steak and Yeah.
You know what my doctor says? He says he thinks it's full of shit, but he said that all of his patients that do this diet are incredibly healthy. So he's like, I don't know if it just cleans up their diet and that's what's making them healthy, or if there's some real science to it. But he's like, he actually laughs at me. He goes, it's working, so it doesn't matter.
Well, the doctors think that because this is not taught in medical school, therefore it must be BS, but I don't necessarily buy that. I think there's probably a lot of efficacy to what you're doing, and probably the people that are taking the time to read and study this. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's probably some correlation and some causation, right? Because if you're doing that, it means you're already going to be focusing on your health. So you're probably going to start eliminating the thing like processed foods and this crap that we call food that's not even actually food. So in a lot of ways, you're probably just by doing that, you're going to make yourself a lot healthier. But maybe it is. I mean, it's certainly, look, if it's worked for you for 30 years, and I guess that's what he would say, whatever is behind it is working, then
what I realized,
go for it.
What wasn't working for me is I was working 100 hours a week.
Yeah.
And I was sick all the time. Mm. And I was sick without being able to call in sick. You know, I still having to work. So there was a place around the corner from the First Coyote, which was called the Russian Baths. I'm assuming it's still there. Wednesdays was Women's Day. I'd go open the bar. Then I'd go over to the Russian Baths. And I'll never forget eavesdropping on these women, these older women who were talking about this book. I literally left there, went to Barnes & Noble, you know, the physical store, and bought the book. And it was interesting when I started doing it and cutting these foods out that I didn't realize how poorly I ate because I thought I was eating well. And then I realized when you start eliminating some of these things and you start keeping a journal of what you're eating, I was eating wheat products all day.
Yeah.
And Just so many sauces. So, I didn't realize. I in my mind, if I cooked it at home, it made it cleaner, and I didn't really quite get that. I didn't understand olive oil or keeping things in a more natural state when you eat them.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's worked well. You obviously stay fit also. And look, and I'm asking you about this stuff because I think that this is a part of the industry that you're in that is starting to change for the better, which is, and there's been a work hard, play hard mentality for so long in this industry. It's led to some positive things and some business successes. It's also led to burnout. It's led to substance abuse. It's led to mental health issues, at scale. And so having leaders like yourself recognize sleep, nutrition, exercise, like these are the foundations of good overall health. And when we have these things and we give ourselves the gift of these things, just like when we are on a plane and they say, if you've got a kid with you, you take the oxygen first and then you give it to the kid because you've got to be able to lead this team of people. And so, by example of taking good care of yourself and eating well and validating that that's important, then that gives you the ability to sustain what you're doing for longer and to lead and manage people both physically and mentally in a way that is necessary to sustain a successful business and grow a successful business. Am I right on that? I mean, is that the sort of part of your philosophy?
I'll tell you, when I was young in New York City, and I was in a kind of group of bar owners in the East Village. And what I realized is I could pinpoint who wasn't going to make it because they were living the lifestyle. And if you're living the bar lifestyle as an owner, you can't hold that up.
Yeah,
And I
yeah.
just remember always knowing, okay, keep this person to a distance because the way he's running his life and bar is not coherent to a real successful story. They might have some success, but they will end up hurting themselves and ruining their business. And it's just, especially back then where it was so like Wild West in New York.
Wide open. Yeah, right. Yep. You realize that at a young age, clearly. So, yeah, that's impressive. It takes a lot of us a lot longer to figure all that out. But
I
you
didn't
had a
want
good
to be one
business
of
mind.
them. I remember managing the idiot and being there was an older guy who was a manager of another bar, a very famous bar. I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to, but he invited all of us, like the groups of like after hour managers and some bartenders, back to his bar at like 5 in the morning. And I'll never forget this, looking around at all, and I was 22 and looking around and seeing these, 50-year-olds doing lines of coke and all the drinking. And I literally had an aha moment of that's not going to be me,
Yeah.
and
Yep.
believe me, I drink, but I just remember realizing that that can't be your lifestyle. You're never going to make it.
Can you drink on with O positive blood? Are there any of those? Are there any? Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure not as much wine as I am currently drinking, but yeah, you could drink on it. But again, back then, especially at my bars where we don't even have wine, and if we have wine, it's in a box,
Yeah.
it's a lot of shots. We're pushing that dive bar thing. And,
Yeah.
you know, getting a little harder to keep that up. So,
Well, okay, so then you're there, you're in New York, this movie comes, your branding, so you got to figure all this stuff out. And then you've got lightning in a bottle, so you can leverage that to probably fast track some growth. You've got X number of locations. What, you said nine that are company owned now, and the rest are franchise. So did you get to nine and then decide to franchise, or did you blend that? Like, how, tell me about the
was
franchising aspect of this.
blended. So the very first franchise was the Las Vegas Coyote Ugly. So, and they're still open.
Okay.
So they're open
Okay.
now, I don't know, 23 years maybe.
Did they approach you, or did you have a franchise organization you were working
They
through, or?
approached me.
Okay.
So,
Okay.
and it was interesting because I really didn't. So Coyote Ugly, when you franchise, like if I was to franchise McDonald's, everything's in place. Okay, the secret sauce has to be, you have to buy the secret sauce from me. You have to
Yeah,
buy the
right.
hamburger from this distributor. You have to do this, you have to do that. Well, Coyote's been difficult because I can't, there's things that are intangible that you can't, there's no buying it. And
Yeah.
that first one was hard because I didn't have the processes in place to train them and to grow my business. So they do great, but in hindsight, I'd wished I had a better training plan in order back then, but I didn't know what I was doing. So then I opened the third one. So then it's me. I owned and operated, and that was New Orleans, bought the building, and I trained. So, you know, we did a lot of training, but at that point, I realized that what I hadn't done with Las Vegas, I needed to do. So then by the third one, people were reaching out to franchise. I was looking at other locations as well. So that's when I started to realize, okay, I need a corporate team. So I had already had the lawyer became one of my partners in what I call DevCo, which is our development company. And so he was a partner. Then I had to pick other people who could help me while we were managing these bars remotely and help us to start training the franchisees. So I think by New Orleans, I realized I had to get things, I had to learn how to be better at managing these remote locations.
In New Orleans, so if my math is about, were you, is that like around 2000? Is that when you opened that?
I think it when was 9/11?
2001.
So it was that year. Well, it
Oh,
was
wow.
2002 because we had gotten the building literally like a week before 9/11. So I moved down. So I was still in New York. I moved down there in October, and we were supposed to open Coyote in December, but it got pushed back and we opened it in January.
Okay. And then you stayed there. You lived in New Orleans, but you continued to grow within your corporate footprint as well as a franchise. So where, how did you, were you spending a lot of time on the road, and how often were y'all opening new locations over the years?
Well, we were opening a good three bars every year. So I had my son was two when we moved to New Orleans. In my mind, when we first moved, I was thinking, give me 6 months to get the bar off the ground and train everybody. You know, and I had managers, but my life with him was easier down there. And most of our franchisees and our potential new locations were in the South, so I realized New Orleans was a better home base for me. So we started to the next one was a franchise Atlanta. And all of a sudden, I had a bigger team. And, you know, we were creating training for their staffs. I always go in, even to the franchises, I hire their original staff. So I enjoy doing it. We call it a girl search. I go in for a weekend. It's a big hoopla. And then my team goes and trains them. So that's when I started realizing we had to have real structure behind our process.
What does a day look like for you nowadays?
Pretty damn awesome owning my own
Yeah, I
company.
bet.
Well, some weeks I'm traveling. So
Yeah.
if it's in the States, I try to make my trips short, 2 days. It's a little harder out of California because I lose time going elsewhere, but 2 or 3 days. Internationally, usually a week. Today, like okay, today I'm not traveling. It's I did bonuses this morning. I did emails. I work out usually before 10. I then conference calls. Like I have a conference call in a few hours. It's a lot of calls when I'm home, calls and emails, but I can pretty much arrange it around my schedule. So if somebody
Good.
calls me and says, go to lunch, I can do it while I'm home.
Yeah. I want to ask back. You said you mentioned a couple of times early on that you did not have a lot of means growing up. What do you say to your parents? What did you learn from your parents that's helped you?
Well, I think the two things that stick with me forever was you don't need a man, do it yourself. You want it, work for it and get it. And I, in my household, there was never, ever, ever, you're a woman, you can be a nurse and the man can be a doctor. That was not like I didn't even understand that. I remember being interviewed. It was like 1 or 2 years in at Coyote, and people saying to me, so the interviewer is saying, how do you feel being one of the only women in a male-driven industry? And I remember thinking, like, it didn't occur to me. I just, my parents, I just did not think that way because they had just taught us that do the best you can and, you know, beat everybody else. And so I had that. And, you know, my parents were very into education. So they didn't have much, but they made sure we got a very good education. And so in life, I owe, and even getting these bars and growing this business is, you have to do it based on research and knowledge. Passion's just not good enough. You know, somebody can call me in the you know, I live in bumfuck Idaho and I want to open a Coyote Ugly and I know it will be great because my 10 friends go out. It's like, that's not good enough. You know, you have to do your research. You, passion can only get you by a certain amount before you have to have like a real foundation there. So I think education, they gave us that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly did. You went to NYU and probably I wonder what did you think when you went to NY? What did you think you were going to eventually do? I know it was kind of you're in the track of you went to college and now you were working for a stockbroker, but was that like what were your ambitions when you were younger?
I think that, you know, the downside to my parents were that the things I wanted to do, I wanted to be a social worker, if you could believe that. And they were like, nope, you'll never make any money. I just remember I went to college. This is the honest truth. I went to college to appease my parents. And because I didn't, it wasn't like I had a goal of being a doctor or, you know, I didn't know what I wanted, to be honest. And I think I thought, okay, you go to college And then you go and get the job I did get. You know, you go out to the business world and work. And I think I thought that that's what you did, especially because I didn't have, it wasn't like, you know, my husband was, my ex-husband was a screenwriter. So he had a real passion for something. At that point, I just didn't have that. So I went to college because I was supposed to. Not a good answer, but it's the truth.
Oh, I think that's true for a lot of people, though. Or you think you go thinking you know what you want to do, and then you that can change. I mean, I thought I was going to be a doctor. I'm this is the furthest thing from that now, so
I will tell you this
it changes.
though, now I think I would go into nutrition. I
Yeah.
think that now that that kind of exists at a genre that you could actually take classes and get a degree in that, I think I would do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting that concept you had years and years ago, ahead of the curve with, you know, healthy
I
fast
know.
food.
God damn it.
It's hard to pull off though. There's still, I mean, there's, I don't, I mean, like it depends on how you define healthy, right? Like, is Chipotle healthy? I don't know. I mean, it's healthier than a Big Mac probably, but
I
it's
literally
industrial.
read the ingredients of everything I buy. Every ingredient.
Yeah.
Now, can I get
Good.
that at a restaurant? No, of course I can. And I'm not micromanaging at a restaurant.
Yeah.
But I think that now, I mean, it's just so interesting because then if you think, you know, there's all these diets with you know, you wear that glucose monitor.
The continuous glucose monitor. Yeah, sure.
So according to that, wine has a zero glycemic index. So I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
I'm good. But it just it could be a whole new field. I think I would have definitely, if I was still in the mix, be doing something like that.
I'm pretty fascinated with it. And people are paying more and more attention to that these days for good reason. I mean, there's so many health things, there's so many medications, there's so many people with autoimmune issues, there's so many things that are unexplained now. And, you know, the prescriptive thing is just you go to the doctor, we'll take this medication and whatever. And then, like, you know, that's just this vicious cycle of like, well, what's the root cause of all that? Maybe it's the blood type thing. Maybe it's who knows? I mean, but there's more people thinking about that and trying to think through that now. And I mean, I think generally I read the ingredients too, and I try to eat as many things that theoretically I could go pick or hunt myself, like, you know, versus things that are like put together in some factory with a lot of process and, you know, all kinds of stuff that you don't even, you know, can barely pronounce. You would think generally that if you limit it to that, you know, cutting out is probably better than adding, right? Like the more things you take away from your diet, it's probably better than adding more and more things, just generally speaking. But well, look, you have congratulations. I mean, you've built an amazing business, an international brand. You've figured a lot of things out along the way, which I love, which is okay, this is, I need to do this differently, or this isn't working. And so I'm going to be self-aware and I'm going to iterate. And you've got a very, very entrepreneurial mindset of just, now we need this, and let's be aware of that and check the ego and figure this out and say, I don't know. That's cool. That's good. So then let's learn and do the research. Like, that's a huge, huge part of
And
what you've done, clearly.
surrounding yourself with people who add. So to
Yeah.
me, what I realized is that there were certain things I was good at, certain things I wasn't as good at, and certain things that I wasn't passionate about. So, you know, one of the first hires I had in corporate was my chief of marketing, who lives in Charlotte, Lee Killingsworth, and you know, such a great passion for marketing. And so that was great. He added to my team. I hired somebody out of Atlanta, Kevin Bailey, who ran nightclubs. But all of a sudden, as we were growing the business, we realized that he knew so much about construction and just licenses and stuff. And all of a sudden, he became our director of design development. So he goes in, builds the bars, helps to maintain them, is incredible. It might sound weird, but incredibly current, especially for us, because we need certain things when we're building Coyote Ugly Bar. So it's, I try to bring people up that added to us to make Coyote Ugly stronger. So I think I did a very good job with that.
Is yeah, I wanted to ask you. So Lee Killen, he's here. Is he from Charlotte?
No, he just moved there about a year ago.
Okay. I'd love to meet him. I'd love to
Yeah,
hang
I
out with him.
actually
I'd love
texted
to have
him
him.
this morning, told him I would connect you to.
Yeah, because this studio we're here is it's kind of near uptown, and I mean we have it, it's set up so that we could have a, I could do an episode here, in person. So
Have
yeah,
a
I'd love to
fun
talk to
one with
him.
him because he and I. So when he started with Coyote, he was a nightclub guy.
Yeah.
Dude, the outfits. I run dive bars. I can wear jeans every day. So he comes, I mean, bedazzled, True Religion jeans, all this stuff. Well, he also runs our merch, arena. And I remember one of our biggest fights. Because he's always like trying to shove this stuff down my throat, right? One of our biggest fights was about selling a trucker's hat. In my mind, that was the worst hat you have ever seen, whatever. I find and we are like fighting about it. I find like fine, fucking try to sell the fucking trucker's hat. The thing was number one, like the highest sales ever. So I'm like, touche, my friend.
Dude
DJ.
knows what he's doing. Well, there you go. That's an example. Bring, people that really are know very much about what they're doing and letting them run with it. Well, I'd love to meet him. And then the other thing I wanted to ask, so where are we going from here? Do you have new openings coming in the next year, and where are they going to be?
We're doing a relaunch of one of our Japanese bars in Fukuoka, Japan. So we have new owners there and we're relaunching. So I'm sending my team out there in January. And then we're going in February, we're opening a new bar in Bristol in the UK.
Oh, nice.
And then in the States, we're trying to narrow down a place in Savannah and Charleston.
Okay, Savannah or Charleston. All right. And you have I have a good buddy that does a lot of real estate development in the Southeast. You already got that on your team, that's what your construction guy does.
You want to know, that's actually interesting if you have somebody down there because we were just talking yesterday that we're not that happy with one of our people in Savannah. So maybe you could hook up with Lee on that.
I will hook up with him on that. Super good friend, phenomenal at what he does. Been doing it a really long time, and Southeast presence. So yeah, Trey Morgan. I'll hook y'all up with him. Dude, this is fun. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. This is a lot of fun. I'm so glad I got a chance to know you. I will say, I've never been to one of your places. So I'm going to New York in January.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go to Coyote Ugly.
You gotta
Yeah,
go.
for sure.
We just had SantaCon last week in New York. Freaking nuts. The manager's sending me pictures, just a line around the block. It's so fun.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Lil, inspiring story. Love hanging out with you. Love talking to you. Thank you to Dave Nitzel for making the introduction. And I know he listens. He's one of our, he sent me this screenshot the other day, and it said, like, I guess he listens to us on Spotify, and it said, you're one of the top 0.5% listeners of Restaurant Owners Uncorked, which is our podcast. And it said the number of hours he's listened. I mean, I don't even listen to our own podcast, but I can't listen to myself. But I mean, he's listening to like some, I didn't even know we had that many hours of content, but he's listening to like all of it. So he's a great
Well,
dude.
and I
And
think he's really good about staying current. And I think that
yeah,
that's
he is.
part of his research is staying current. And so you're helping him do that. So that's great.
Yep. That's exactly right. Cool. Well, enjoy your day out there in Coronado, and go give Herbie some love. He's probably like, man,
Yeah, he's
I need some
definitely
attention here.
laying down like, okay, enough.
All right.
Merry
Well, listen, if
Christmas,
you
happy
come to
holidays.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and if you are ever, if you're coming to Savannah or Charleston, or if you're coming to see Lee or anything there above, let me know. I'd love to meet you in person. I love to hang out. I always love good reasons to go to Savannah and Charleston. Freaking great cities.
Yeah, they are very good.
Yeah. So let me know when you're heading this way, and safe travels to, well, you're not going to Japan, but wherever you go, safe travels. Thank you. Appreciate you.
I may be going to Japan. I haven't decided yet.
It'd be a good trip. We'll stay connected.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Bye, Lil. Thanks. You too. See ya.